Okay, so when you're a guest speaker for 1 week, you get to pick and talk about whatever it is you want to talk about. And so I spent some time thinking about what would be a good topic for us. And as you know, we're studying 1 Peter on Sunday evenings. And so I thought it might be good if we spent today's class looking at Peter, looking at Peter's life and what we can learn about Peter. And I've always enjoyed studying Peter. When I was right out of college, I used to fill in for some different congregations around the St. Louis area and teach adult classes and preach. And it was always a bit overwhelming to me, and I always struggled a little bit being a young Christian standing in front of a group of people who are very mature Christians and trying to teach the Bible to them. And when you're at that age, you know, and I'm sure many of you can relate to this, when you're at that age and you're still a pretty new Christian, you have ups and downs in your Christian life. And Peter was an individual who had ups and downs in his Christian life. And so I always felt a lot of comfort when I thought about Peter when I was preparing to teach class or preach. So I want to spend today talking about Peter, and I want to talk about some of the things that we can learn from some stories about Peter. So as we dive into the study, let me just ask you, what do we know about Peter? Tell me, what do we know from the Bible about Peter? Impetuous. What's impetuous mean? I'm sorry? Talk first and think later. He seemed to not have a filter. He seemed to not think about what he was going to say. He just said it. He could be impulsive. He could be a little sudden, maybe a little reckless in his reactions. What else do we know about Peter? Right. Okay, so high moment in his life. Was the first one to answer. Jesus asked the disciples, who do people say that I am? They said, some say John the Baptist, some say Elijah, Jeremiah, some of the other prophets. But he said, who do you say that I am? And Peter said, you are the Christ, the Messiah. What was over here?
He denied Christ 3 times.
Denied Jesus 3 times. Low point. Okay, so he recognized his shortcomings and adjusted.
Along with that, when he's all in, he is all in.
He is all in. He is he's fiercely loyal. He is he's eager to serve, and he is 100% all in what he says and what he does. What else? Okay, he was one of the three that was real close to Christ. Peter, James, and John, they were with Christ on at least three occasions. It was just the three of them with Jesus. What were those stories? When was Peter, James, and John with Christ alone?
Transfiguration.
Transfiguration. What else? Garden of Gethsemane. He did walk some. So, yep, had faith to walk on water. The third one was Jairus' the daughter, raised this third time. Peter, James, and John were just with Jesus. What else? What else do we know about Peter? He was a fisherman. Who was his fishing buddies? James, John, and his brother. Who was his brother?
Andrew.
Okay, where do they fish? Sea of Galilee. Okay. What else do we know?
He was an elder, wasn't he?
He was an elder. 1 Peter chapter 5, verse 1 refers to himself as being an elder.
He apparently lived longer than all the other apostles.
He lived longer than some of the other apostles. What do we know about the end of Peter's life? Do we know anything about the end of Peter's life? All right, so in John chapter 21, Jesus tells him, verses 18 and 19, Jesus tells him about his death, tells him it's going to be painful, tells him he's going to die for God. I think the traditional view is he may have been crucified, and because he didn't want to be crucified as Christ was, he requested to be crucified upside down. We're not 100% certain on some of those facts, but we do know he died in Nero's reign. We know 1 Peter and 2 Peter were probably written around 64, 66 A.D. Nero died in 68 A.D., so it was sometime around that time frame. What else do we know? He was married. How do we know he was married? He had a mother-in-law. His mother-in-law was sick. Jesus healed her. But we also know in 1 Corinthians chapter 9, verse 5, Paul talks about how Peter took with him his believing wife. All right, what else do we know? If he's an elder, he had to have a wife. That's correct.
He had to be reprimanded by Paul.
He was reprimanded by Paul. What do we know about Peter and Paul and their relationship? Do we know much about it? They traveled together, so we know that they spent about 15 days together in Jerusalem. We know that that Paul referred to Peter as a pillar in Galatians, but in that same book, Paul reprimands Peter. What did Peter do wrong? What caused Paul to have to reprimand Peter?
Hypocrisy.
Wouldn't eat with the Gentiles in front of other Jews. Okay. Anything else? Delivered the first gospel sermon on Pentecost. In Acts chapter 2, we learn that on the day of Pentecost, when the apostles spoke, of course, all the apostles spoke, Luke records Peter's sermon. What happened after Jesus ascended into heaven, but before the day of Pentecost, before Peter taught that sermon, what did the apostles do? In Acts chapter 1. They gathered together in one place, and what did they do?
They appointed another apostle.
When you read in Acts chapter 1, Peter led that process. What happened in Acts chapter 5 with Ananias and Sapphira? They lied, and who dealt with them?
Peter.
Okay. Okay, so Peter, he did a lot of things. What I'd like for us to do is just look at some of these stories. Some of them you mentioned, but I want us to spend a little bit of time in a couple of these stories and see how Peter dealt with certain situations. So, if you have your Bible, turn to Matthew chapter 14. Let's start there. All right, so we've already raised this story. It's the story of Peter trying to walk on water. As Jerry said, he did walk on water. Let's see what we can learn from this story. Let's start in verse 22. Immediately, Jesus made his disciples get into the boat and go before him to the other side while he sent the multitudes away. And when he had sent the multitudes away, he went up to the mountain by himself to pray. Now when evening came, he was alone there. But the boat was now in the middle of the sea, tossed by the waves, for the wind was contrary. Now in the fourth watch of the night, Jesus went to them walking on the sea. When the disciples saw him walking on the sea, they were troubled, saying, "It is a ghost." And they cried out for fear. But immediately Jesus spoke to them, saying, "Be of good cheer, it is I. Do not be afraid." And Peter answered him and said, "Lord, if it is you, command me to come to you on the water." So he said, "Come." And when Peter had come down out of the boat, he walked on the water to go to Jesus. But when he saw that the wind was boisterous, he was afraid. Beginning to sink, he cried out, saying, "Lord, save me." And immediately Jesus stretched out his hand and caught him and said to him, "O you of little faith, why did you doubt?" And when they got into the boat, the wind ceased. Then those who were with the boat came and worshipped him, saying, "Truly, you are the Son of God." All right. Didn't know if that was me causing that. Or... Okay. So here we are. Jesus decides he wants to be alone. He's been with the multitude for a period of time. He's going to go up into the mountains alone to pray. He takes the disciples, tells them to get on the boat. They start out on the Sea of Galilee. Says they're about halfway out on the Sea of Galilee. It's about 3 or 4 miles off the coast. The wind starts to blow. The waves are crashing. They're getting afraid. And then Jesus comes walking on the water. And they're afraid initially. They're afraid, and he calms them, tells them it's him. Okay. Then what happens? What does Peter do?
It almost seems like a challenge.
I want to come back to that in a second. He questions him. Isn't that interesting how Peter responds to that? Jesus says, "It's me, I'm coming. Don't be afraid." And Peter reacts by saying, "Well, if it's you, if it's really you, Jesus, then command me to come to you, and I'll walk out on this water." We said he was impetuous, seemed to say things before maybe he thought through them. So he challenges Jesus in a way, says, "If it's you, I'm going to tell me to come walk to you." What's Jesus say?
Come on.
Come on. Come on out. So Peter comes out. Then what happens? He gets afraid. Starts to sink. He does walk for a little while, but he does get afraid. Starts to sink. Jesus reaches out to him. What does Jesus say to him? "Oh, you of little faith, why do you doubt?" I have a lot of people in my lives that I respect, and I care about what they think of me. Can you imagine how you would feel if Jesus said to you, "You of little faith, why do you doubt?" How do you think that probably made him feel? Let me ask you this. If you sort of go back and look at what has happened, why do you think Peter lost his faith that moment? Just maybe go... I'm sorry? Took his eyes off of Jesus. So think about this. We started in verse 22. If you go back before verse 22, what had just happened? He just fed the 5,000. So Peter's with Jesus. Peter takes 5 loaves and 2 fish, feeds 5,000 men plus women and children. They have enough. They have 12 baskets left over. All right, so Peter's just seen this. Right? He then gets in the boat. He's in the boat. The wind's blowing. They're afraid. Jesus comes walking on water. Jesus then tells them, "You come out on the water." Peter gets out. He starts walking on water. Of all those things, he just saw Jesus feed 5,000 people. He just saw that miracle. He just saw the miracle of Jesus walking on water. He just walked on water. And at the same time, he started to get afraid. He lost his faith and he fell. Okay.
Could he have been ashamed?
Could he have been ashamed for challenging Jesus? We don't know. What we know is that he lost his faith. That's right. Peter knew better. I'm sorry. Yeah, Peter's character was one where he was the first to speak and first to say what he wanted to say, and we'll look at this in a moment. But there was there's a bit of almost a competition. It appeared with the apostles. We'll see that after Jesus instituted the Lord's Supper and they start having the debate on who's the greatest. Yeah. So the point is, Peter had the habit of speaking and acting before he thought much about it. So he decided to ask for that, and before he knew it, he was out in the middle of the water in a storm, walking on water. So for us, I think what we see here is we see that Peter probably knew better. Peter understood what Jesus could do. He had witnessed these miracles. I will say that in Mark's account of this, it says that the apostles, the disciples, were hardened by the miracle of feeding the 5,000. So what we do know is that they seem not to connect it. But that said, you know, Peter knew better. Peter reacted the way he did. He did have some faith for a little while, but he lost that faith, and Jesus caught him. All right, so let's go to another one. Let's just turn over a couple pages, Matthew chapter 16. All right, we could spend a lot of time looking at verses 17 through 19. We're not going to, that's not the focus of what I want us to look at today. I want us to look at the end of that. But let's begin in Matthew chapter 16, beginning in verse 13. When Jesus came into the region of Caesarea Philippi, he asked his disciples, saying, who do men say that I, the Son of Man, am? So they said, some say John the Baptist, some Elijah, others Jeremiah, or one of the prophets. And he said to them, but who do you say that I am? Simon Peter answered and said, you are the Christ, the Messiah, the Son of the living God. Jesus answered and said to him, blessed are you, Simon Bar-Jonas, or Simon the son of Jonah. For flesh and blood has not revealed this to you, but my Father who is in heaven. And I also say to you that you are Peter, and on this rock I will build my church, and the gates of Hades shall not prevail against it. And I will give you the keys of the kingdom of heaven. And whatever you bind on earth will be bound in heaven. Whatever you loose on earth will be loosed in heaven. Then he commanded his disciples that they should tell no one that he was Jesus the Christ. From that time, Jesus began to show his disciples that he must go to Jerusalem and suffer many things for the elders and chief priests and scribes, and be killed and be raised the third day. Then Peter took him aside and began to rebuke him, saying, far be it from you, Lord, this shall not happen to you. But he turned, Jesus, and said to Peter, get behind me, Satan, you are an offense to me, for you are not mindful of the things of God, but the things of men. Okay. So, Jesus has the disciples. He asks them, who do people say that I am? They throw out some different names that they've heard. John the Baptist, Elijah, Jeremiah, one of the other prophets. He asks them, who am I? Who do you say that I am? And Peter, we like this boldness, right? We like this attribute in his character. He stands firm, quickly responds, you are the Christ, you are the Messiah, the Son of the living God. Jesus blesses him in that confession. And then Jesus starts to do something with the disciples that he hasn't really done yet. He's alluded to this before. And if you read in the Mark's account of this, and beginning in Mark chapter 8, what you'll see is throughout Mark 8 and 9 and 10, Jesus is explaining to the disciples that he is going to have to be killed, that he's going to have to die, that he's going to be raised in 3 days, and it says that the disciples really didn't understand it, but they were too afraid to ask what Jesus meant. What we see here is for the first time, Jesus really explaining and disclosing to the disciples what's going to happen to him. He tells them, and listen to the details, how explicit these details are. He tells them he's going to have to go to Jerusalem, that he's going to suffer different abuses. He's going to be prosecuted by the elders and the chief priests and the scribes. He's going to be put to death. He's going to be raised on the third day. So Jesus gives them a lot of details and explains this to them. That boldness that we like in Peter, that reaction that he gave us a few verses earlier, proclaiming who Jesus was and confessing who Jesus was, what's Peter do now? He rebukes Jesus. Peter rebukes Jesus. What's he say to him? This is not going to happen to you. You are not going to die. How does Jesus respond? Get behind me, Satan. What did Jesus mean when he said that?
That's Satan talk.
Jesus, who stands in our way of doing what God wants us to do? Satan. What was Peter doing when he was trying to stand in front of Jesus from doing what God's plan was? Get behind me, Satan. And then it says, you're a what? Stumbling block. So some versions say stumbling block, others say offenses. You're an offense to me. Why was he an offense? What was it that upset Jesus about Peter's reaction? What was the problem with Peter's reaction? He didn't get it. He was putting his own opinion. What did Peter just been told a couple verses before? Who was Jesus just talked about establishing the kingdom of heaven, right? What did everyone think was going to happen with Jesus? What was he going to do? Bring a kingdom, right? Establish an earthly kingdom. Is that what Jesus was there to do? Is that what Peter may have thought that's what Jesus was there to do? What's it mean when Jesus says that's what they wanted? What's it mean when Jesus say, you are not mindful of the things of God, but the things of men? What's he referring to? I'm sorry?
What men want.
Yep. They were expecting an earthly kingdom. That's right. That's exactly right. Peter was having a hard time reconciling the fact that you're going to have this earthly kingdom and Jesus is going to die and how is that going to work and that's not going to work. And so I'm just going to tell him that that's not how it's going to work. I'm going to let Jesus know that he's not, he can't die. I would suggest to you that perhaps what he has done is he's lacked a little bit of faith in what Jesus is telling him is going to happen and how this plan all fits together. Right, when Jesus made his confession, when Peter made his confession, Jesus said to him, flesh and blood has not revealed this to you, but my Father who's in heaven. Yeah, right? So, you know, I talked about at the beginning of the class, you have these ups and downs, you know, in your Christian walk. It can be like a roller coaster, right? Peter had a real high, and then he had a real low. He went from, you know, being blessed by Jesus to being told, get behind me, Satan. You're an offense. You're a stumbling block to me. And, we are eventually going to turn the page here on Peter. I don't want this to make it sound like we were being too harsh on Peter. There's a reason we're looking at some of his shortcomings. But one of the things I've always thought is important when we study the New Testament is how difficult this probably must have been for those individuals because their entire, you know, belief system and the way they thought about how this was all going to work was just flipped. And they didn't understand it. In fact, after Jesus is raised from the dead and he's with the disciples, what do they ask him?
Now it's time for going to restore the kingdom to Israel.
Yeah, are you going to restore the kingdom to Israel now? They still didn't even get it then, right? And they don't really get it until Acts 2 because they have the helper. Okay? All right. Let's turn to Luke 22. So let me give you some context because we don't have time to read this entire story together. So let me give you a little bit of context. And most of, you know, you all know this story. And you have to read Luke. You have to read Luke 22 with Matthew 26 and Mark 14 and John 13. You really need to read them all together because those writers include different parts of this story. And so when you read them all together, you can get a full understanding of the story. But Jesus has just instituted the Lord's Supper. And as I mentioned a few moments ago, the disciples get into a debate about who is the greatest. Who is the greatest among us? And Jesus explains to them that that's not the way you are supposed to think. That's not the attitude you're supposed to have. What did Jesus just done with the disciples to teach them about serving? He just washed their feet. All right? They already lost that story. They already lost that lesson. So he reminds them that they need to be servants, that this idea of being of having lordships is a Gentile, it's a pagan way of thinking. That's not the way he wants them to be thinking and living their lives. They need to be servants. Okay. He goes on to tell them in Matthew and Mark, it refers to the fact that he explains to them that they're going to stumble. And so I like this version of the story in Luke 22, beginning at verse 31. It gives us a little bit more information that the others do not share. It says, "And the Lord said, Simon, Simon, indeed Satan has asked for you that he may sift you as wheat. But I have prayed for you that your faith should not fail. And when you have returned to me, strengthen your brethren." But Peter, he said to him, "Lord, I am ready to go with you both to prison and to death." Then he said, I will tell you, Peter, the rooster shall not crow this day before you will deny three times that you know me." Let's skip on over to verse 54. So Jesus now has been, he's prayed in the Garden of Gethsemane, he's been betrayed by Judas, he's been arrested. By the way, who pulls out a sword and cuts off the high priest's servant's ear?
Peter.
What's Jesus do? Heals him. All right, so now Jesus is being led away. Having arrested him, they led him and brought him, Jesus, into the high priest's house. But Peter followed at a distance. And when they had kindled a fire in the midst of the courtyard and sat down together, Peter sat among them. A certain servant girl, seeing him as he sat by the fire, looked intently at him and said, "This man was also with him." But he denied him, saying, "Woman, I do not know him." After a little while, another saw him and said, "You are of them." But Peter said, "Man, I am not." Then, after about an hour had passed, another confidently affirmed, saying, "Surely this fellow also was with him, for he is a Galilean." But Peter said, "Man, I do not know what you are saying." Immediately, while he was still speaking, the rooster crowed, and the Lord turned and looked at Peter. Then Peter remembered the word of the Lord, how he had said to him, "Before the rooster crows, you will deny me three times." So Peter went out and wept bitterly. Okay, so let's go back to Luke 22 and verses 31. Jesus has warned the apostles they're going to stumble. And he speaks specifically to Peter. And he tells Peter that he's going to stumble. Why did Jesus say Peter was going to stumble? What's his prayer for Peter? That his faith won't fail him. There's that faith thing again with Peter. Jesus is praying that his faith won't fail him. What's Peter's reaction? I'm sorry. Yeah, he's like, "Jesus, you don't even have to worry that my faith's not going to fail. I'm ready to go with you wherever you need to. Wherever you're going, I'm going. You go to prison, I'm with you in prison. You're going to die, I'm going to die with you." That's what Peter says. What happens though?
Jesus tells him what's going to happen.
Jesus tells him what's going to happen. And that's what happens. So Peter follows Jesus. And it really is helpful when you look at some of the other accounts of this. But, first a servant girl claims that he was with Jesus. He denies that. Another man says, "No, you were with Jesus," and he denies that again. And then I like the way Luke says this. Another confidently affirmed, my version, confidently affirmed that Peter was with them because he was a Galilean. How did they know he was a Galilean? His accent. So in Mark, it refers to the fact that his speech gave him away. He was a Galilean. How does How does Peter react to this third accusation? He cursed, he swear, in Matthew's account, he cursed and he swear. He got very, very animated, right? I do not know this man. I do not know him. And then what happens? Rooster crows. And there's two reasons I like Luke's account of this. And that's one of them. What happens right after that? Who looks at him? Can you imagine that? Can you imagine how that must have made Peter feel? Can you imagine how that must have made Jesus feel? I mean, Jesus knew what was going to happen, but still. But imagine how Peter is feeling. Just put all these stories together a little bit. Peter challenges Jesus in the boat. Says, if it's really you walking to me, you tell me to walk to you. Jesus allows that to happen. He walks on water. He starts to get afraid, starts to sink. Jesus grabs him by the hand and says, you of little faith, why did you doubt me? Second story we looked at. Peter confidently confesses who Jesus is, and then a little while later rebukes Jesus. Pulls him aside, rebukes him. Jesus responds, get behind me, Satan. You're an offense to me. This is what Peter is being told by Jesus. You have little faith. Get behind me, Satan. You're an offense to me. Jesus tells him he's going to stumble. Peter tells him, I'm going to go with you to prison. I'm going to go with you to death. I am not going to fail you. Peter fails him. Jesus doesn't say anything to Peter this time. He just looks at him. He looks at him, and Peter knows. What does Peter do when Jesus looks at him? He remembered what Jesus said. And what? How does he react? Goes out and weeps bitterly. Was Peter sorry? Peter know he did wrong? Peter react the right way when he realized what he did? He did. I've always liked the fact, go back and read at the end of John, when Jesus is raised from the dead, Jesus asks to see Peter. Jesus and Peter get to speak a little bit together at the end of John. And Jesus asked Peter three times, do you love me? And Peter responds three times, I love you. And I've always think that's important when you think about this story, to realize that Peter came back and reacted the right way and Jesus recognized it. Here. Okay. All right, let's look at one more. David is right. Those bells come fast. Okay, Acts chapter 4. We won't read this story. We'll just talk about it because of our time. So like I said, I mean, we've spent some time here thinking about, you know, how did Peter do this? You know, Peter failing Jesus, Peter lacking faith. What I want you to see is, and we just talked about how Peter repented of what he did wrong. He came back to Jesus. But I want you to see how firm Peter then stood later in his life. In Acts chapter 3, Peter and John are at the temple. They're teaching others. They heal a lame man. There's a man who's lame. Peter heals that lame man. And then he teaches about Jesus in Acts chapter 3. He tells the people there that they've denied who Jesus is, that they've killed Jesus, that God raised them from the dead. Christ fulfilled all the prophets. And he tells them that they need to be repent and be converted so their sins may be blotted out. Okay, and then we find ourselves in Acts chapter 4. And it says in verse 1 that the priests, the captain of the temple and the Sadducees came upon them, Peter and John. They were upset. Why were the Sadducees upset with Peter and John? Sadducees did not believe in the resurrection. Peter and John were teaching all these people about Jesus, about his death, and about his resurrection. The Sadducees were not happy. It says they laid hands on them. What's that mean? They arrested them. Okay. They could not try them because it was evening. In Jeremiah 21, it talks about how the trials would happen in the day and not in evening. That was the way that it worked, except in Jesus' case. So they held them till the next morning. And the next morning, they brought Peter and John before what we refer to as a Sanhedrin. Of course, the priests and the captain of the temple and the Sadducees were a little late to the game, because what's it tell us had happened in verse 4 of Acts chapter 4? People were already talking about it. They had already heard. They were already believing. And so the Sanhedrin were in a bit of a pickle here. But Sanhedrin brought them in, and of course it's made up of the chief priests and elders and scribes, and tradition is they'd sit in kind of a half circle, and Peter and John would have been in the middle of them. And they say to them in verse 7, "By what power and by what name have you done this? What power and what name have you healed this man?" And think back to the story we just looked at. Peter failing in front of the servant girl, in front of the crowd outside the high priest, wilting away. And that's not the Peter we see here. The Peter we see here is confident. The Peter we see here is bold. The Peter we see here in front of the Sanhedrin. Now, the Sanhedrin had a lot of power, the highest court. They couldn't necessarily put someone to death, but they operated within the Roman government, and they had a lot of power. They had a lot of power over deciding Peter's and John's outcome here, but that didn't stop Peter. Peter says to them that they healed the man and that it was a good deed. They did that in the name of Jesus Christ, who they crucified. They crucified him. He tells them that. You crucified him. And he was raised from the dead. What did we just say the Sadducees didn't believe in? Resurrection. He said, you killed him, and he's been raised from the dead. What you don't believe, that's happened. And he refers to him to Psalms 118 about Jesus being the chief cornerstone. And then he says, there's no other salvation except through Jesus. That's the only way. And it surprises the Sanhedrin because it says in verse 13, they thought Peter and John were untrained and unlearned individuals. They realized that they had spent time with Jesus. And of course, the lame man was there. So they were in a difficult spot. And what it tells us they did was they sent them away and sternly talked to them, told them not to teach anymore. The point is despite all these challenges Peter had in his life, these times when his faith failed him, he came back. And there's going to be times in our lives when we're going to fail. There's going to be times when we are going to falter. What's important is how we come back and know that Jesus is always waiting for us to come back. Thank you for your participation and kind attention.